How are you?
Good, man. That was quite the crazy finish to that hockey game.
Oh, dude, it was
man.
It's great. It's pretty pretty filthy move by young Nathan MacKinnon. The thing is now though, Team North America needs a Finland victory, any Russia victory, and Russia moves on because they won the head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, and that that makes things tough because Finland doesn't have much to play for. But I wouldn't put it past the Russians to drop the ball. I wouldn't be shocked if Russia was devastated and lost that game. I just wouldn't be. I've seen them falter at international event after international event with the big guys in the lineup time and time again. So, yeah, they got to keep their fingers crossed. And I hope that North America pushes through because, to me, they're the most entertaining team we've watched so far. And I would like to see things continue for them. And it wouldn't stun me if Russia didn't manage to beat Finland.
Ryan, we've been batting around, you know, some ideas about just the way Team North America plays. Now, yes, they're highly skilled, but 49 shots versus Sweden, 46 versus Russia, 43 versus Finland.
Yeah.
How can we find a way to translate some of this style of play, willingness to attack, to the National Hockey League? Is there a will for it? Because, man, fans are eating this stuff up.
Yeah, no, there's a will for it. But, I mean, I think we need to be realistic, too. There's not many second pairings of defense in the around the league that have the kind of skill that all three pairings have on that Team North America. The mobility of the defense, their ability to move the puck up ice. So now you've got super mobile, skilled, amazing first pass defensemen moving the puck up ice to forwards who are all world. And that's why we're seeing the level of offense that we're seeing. Part of the problem at the NHL level is you just make all the rule changes you want. You don't have that kind of skill on the ice at all times, that kind of ability to move the puck. And we've seen what happens when you mix really nicely skilled forwards in with defensemen who can't get them the puck. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't translate. So what we're seeing is a little bit of an anomaly because it's incredible puck-moving ability from the blue line up to forwards who have just absolutely phenomenal skill with the puck.
Yeah, but they're also doing it against great defense, right? It's so to me, you look at it, so if the average forwards go against average defense, and you will, because here's the thing we didn't notice in this tournament, Ryan. Have you seen anybody go down on one knee to block shots? Have you seen teams pack it back in tight to the net? I'm with you that, of course, not every guy can pass the puck, but certain philosophical parts of the game in the NHL just don't enhance the game. And the one knee shot blocking, like, I don't need to see Ryan Nugent-Hopkins missing 2 months because he breaks his hand blocking a needless shot in Florida, right? Like, I just wonder if those type of philosophical changes could ever integrate themselves in the NHL, because the NBA and the NFL did it. I think the NHL could do it without changing the fabric of the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we have lots of conversations on the show about different things that they could do in different ways that we could make the game a little bit more entertaining offensively and less of a grind defensively. What we're seeing in North America with Team North America, though, is a team that is being coached based on their strengths. And what you would be asking other coaches to do is to coach their team in a way that's philosophical about the game and disregards maybe what he has in his lineup. So you can't necessarily get certain types of teams to try and play this way, or coaches won't have jobs for very long. So I understand what you're saying, and I do think that there are certainly things they can look at. But, I mean, you know, the Russians blocked a lot of shots against North America. I don't think it's not like we're not seeing that. I just think the skill level with the puck possession game that we're seeing, is because of the kind of skill that these guys have. They don't want to give it up because they can do amazing things with it. And so it's a puck possession game both ways. But you try and do that with guys that aren't as skilled, and you just don't have the same things happening.
So what then if you have more of an emphasis on skill? Because I still think that's one of the underlying issues. You talked about it, and you're bang on. Coaches worry more about job security because it's easier to coach defensive, suffocating hockey. We all know that at every level. And I think it needs to be a major philosophical switch. And even if it's 50, I'm not saying don't coach defense, but how about have as at least as much emphasis on offense and skill in a practice and development as we do on defense? That's all I ask.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I mean, going all the way down to minor hockey levels and all the way through the system, I mean, I have conversations with people who there's frustration because there's so much defense being taught at a really young age. And I'm not saying it's happening everywhere, but it's definitely happening because guys want to find ways to win with what they have and coaches want to progress through the ranks. And the way to do that is to have success. So, yeah, I mean, the system rewards people who win. It doesn't necessarily reward people who coach super entertaining hockey with mixed results, right? So, but yeah, I think that the system is set up that it's easier to put a strong defensive system in play and have success with that than it is to go out on a limb and teach your kids to just go, 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 go. But what we're seeing here is when you have the best of the best together and the green light is flashing, because Todd McClellan in no way, I love the fact that Peter Chiarelli even said it while he was sitting on the panel with the guys about how it's, you got to let the horses run. You just got to let them run. There was no other way for them to go about this. And I love the fact that they're not trying to stifle these guys at all, but they have the horses to let them run. And when you don't have the horses, it's tough to say, go run.
Yeah. True enough. It's hard to get those ideas to transfer in the reality. Like you say, coach wants to keep his job, and that's based on success and wins. Connor McDavid, I tell you what, every time you think, okay, enough hype, we're already talking about the kid, he's only played half an NHL season, he finds another gear, he makes another play, he does something that you just go, man, this kid is money. Oiler fans have got to be excited about what they've seen out of him, because this is the highest level of hockey.
Well, yeah, it is. And then if you look at the way he started that game, I mean, his timing was impeccable. His first three shifts were, certainly his first two were dominant. I mean, he blasted through the middle of the ice and drew a penalty.
Yep.
Now, that penalty never got called because they ended up scoring. I believe, did he draw another penalty on his next shift? He drew a penalty and had the breakaway on his second shift.
Yeah,
so
I believe so.
It was, yeah, I mean, it was an incredible start to the game for him. And what I like to see in Connor's game at this level, and what we didn't see in probably the first six or seven games that he played in the NHL last season, was him swinging deep into his own zone with his stick on the ice and basically making it clear to that defenseman, give me the puck.
Yeah.
And then bolting up ice. What Connor had a tendency to do was want to be the second pass, not want to be the guy. And I don't know if it was maybe some of what Todd talked about last year with giving himself permission, mm-hmm. but Connor needs to command that puck, and he's commanding the puck at this level. And that's a really good sign for the Oilers, because when he started to command the puck, and every time he's on the ice, he should have the puck and they should be getting it to him. When he does that, then he has the ability to impact the game like almost no other players in the league, but it's all about him making sure that he's demanding that thing. And that's what he's doing. That's what he did early in this game.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us in the Rashog Report, brought to you by Auto City Edmonton. And, you know, the thing about McDavid is, and I agree, it's just like, wow. And just when you don't think and go to a new level, it's like, wow, here we go again. Now, regardless of what happens in the Finland game and whether or not Team North America moves on, which I'm sure most people in the hockey world love to see, especially because they might meet Canada if Canada defeats Team Europe tonight, is how do you think Todd McClellan can take this tournament of play from his young centers and Andre Sekera and bring it back to Edmonton to ensure they have a good start?
Well, I think he's in a pretty ideal situation, assuming everybody gets back to town healthy, because especially if you look at a player like Draisaitl, who maybe has been a little bit sluggish in the two starts he's had the last two seasons with the Oilers. Well, there's not really any reason for him to come in and start sluggish at all. The one that I think is going to be really interesting is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, because I haven't seen Ryan play the way he's playing right now. He's worked on his two-way game, and he's been a good two-way player, and he's had to, and he's been in tough matchups. But Nugent-Hopkins at this tournament has taken his game to a whole different level. And it's the subtleties in his game, the two-way subtleties in his game, it's Patrice Bergeron-esque in the way he's taking care of his defensive zone, the way he's making sure he's back and deep, the way he's not getting beat in the defensive zone, he's not cheating, yet he's still, he's playing with a little bit more aggressiveness in terms of attacking the puck and not waiting for things. And this is as good a hockey as I've seen Nugent Hopkins play in a long, long time. And that is the one for me that bodes really well for the Oilers and for Todd McClellan, because if he brings that back, and I think he's going to take a lot of confidence from this tournament, whether they move on or not, just a little bit more intensity in his game and that attention to detail defensively. And he's, to me, he's taken himself to another level here. And that's huge for the Oilers if he brings some of that back with him.
Yeah, I agree, Ryan. Could it be something as simple as maturity? A little bigger, a little stronger, a little, I'm not going to get hurt in this situation. And maybe, tell me if I'm wrong here, maybe the sense from inside, he's got something to prove to himself. And maybe there's a new kid on the block in Connor McDavid. Taylor Hall came on. Sort of not look overlooked, but doesn't have the spotlight on him all the time and can just be Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, I think part of it for Ryan is understanding the kind of player he's going to need to be for this team to have a chance to win. And that's changed a little bit over the last couple of years. Yeah. I mean, Ryan got a lot of tough minutes against a lot of veteran centers because they didn't have anybody else to play against them. They really didn't. And so he had some heavy lifting to do at a young age. But now, and definitely sacrificed offensively for that. But now Connor McDavid is here, and Connor's going to be one of the best players in the world, if not the best. And he is going to play a lot of those tough matchups too. Ryan doesn't have to be the premier offensive center. Ryan, I think, understands what his role will be in the big picture now that Connor McDavid is here. And I think he's really embraced that. I think he really gets it. Mm-hmm. And I think that he looks committed to it. At this tournament, he looks committed to it. We talked about what his role would be before the tournament, guys, and it was going to be that stabilizing veteran two-way presence. He wasn't going to be the guy that was going to have to light it up. That was going to be his role. Now, he's going to have to do better than 42% of the faceoff circle to do that consistently. That has to improve, no question. But it looks to me like he understands long-term, if the Oilers are going to have success with he and McDavid as the 1-2 centers, he's going to need to be more Patrice Bergeron than the offensive juggernaut that maybe some thought he could have been when he was drafted, a high-end offensive player.
Ryan Oshog from TSN joins us. Oshog, I continued my series on questions about the Oilers' defense, kind of focusing on each individual defender.
Okay.
And each one, I think, has some question marks around them because, of course, the Oilers have been the worst defensive team in the league, and it still does start with defense. Today I wrote about Mark Fane and broke down a lot of his numbers. He's not an offensive defenseman, so his goals and stuff really are insignificant. It's more so his defending numbers and positional and who he plays with and stuff like that. And when I look at Mark Fane in New Jersey for 3 years, he had actually pretty good numbers, albeit on a very veteran team playing with Andy Green over like 60, I think it was close to 60% of the time. So that definitely impacted it. But you've seen him now 2 years in Edmonton. He was better when he returned from his three-week stint in the AHL. I don't see Fane, if he has to play higher than your third pair, I think the Oilers are in trouble. Do you think he can play second pair minutes?
I think it's a push to have him playing second pair minutes, and he certainly can't if he looks the same way he looked last year. Then he's not even close. He's borderline to even be in the NHL if he looks the way he looked last year. I think given the bind they're in on the right side, unless there's a real natural easy fit with either Davidson or Sekera that is working and they're having success with, then they'll go Larson in the first pairing and either Sekera or Davidson in the second pairing on the right side. It's not a natural fit for Fane. But when they signed him to be their second unit right side guy. I mean, that's the money he got. That was the role he was given. And you know, based on what they had, he did fit there. You can dig into the numbers, and I know you have here. My analysis on Mark Fane from last season is very, very simple. He was slower than he was the year before. Couldn't skate as well, and was constantly in trouble because of it. Now, I'm not going to say he wasn't in shape. I don't have his fitness test results. All I know is he was slower than he was the year before.
Yeah.
And Mark Fain did not have half a step to lose. So if Mark Fain comes back into camp this year and is as slow as he was last year, he's going to have a serious problem this year, and he'll end up back in the minors. If he comes in and his feet are better and his speed is better, he has the ability to play in the NHL, no question. But his feet killed him last season.
So, quick question. If you had to pick right now, and contracts and nothing were on the board,
yep,
Greiba or Fain, who would be your third-pairing right defender and why?
Well, based on last year, I would go with Greiba, if we're basing it on last year. Because Greiba, at least, there's a physicality to his game. He makes life tough on people that are in and around the blue paint. He's not intimidated. He sticks up for his teammates. I know he's not a perfect player. He is far from a perfect player, but you kind of know what you're getting from him. And he has better feet than Fain. At least last year he did. So I would pick Greiba over Fain if last year is the barometer, but I think that Mark Fain has the potential to be a better defenseman than Eric Greiba. He just needs to put the work in and let himself stay there.
Schauger, enjoy Canada. You're up tonight, although it really only has seeding implications as both teams move on. But depending on what – I'll say this. I think people are probably still going to root for Canada, because if Canada wins and Russia loses, then it's Canada, North America on Saturday night. Woo-hoo! In semifinal number one.
That would be fantastic. All right, boys, we'll talk tomorrow.